Okay, good morning. I'm calling to order this meeting of the House Committee on Children, Families, Finance, and Policy. Welcome to everybody. Folks watching online, there is our meeting materials are on our committee website, so please check that out. I'm going to have the clerk take the roll as usual to start us out. Ms. Hahn, please.
Chair Pinto.
Present.
Vice Chair Keeler.
She's running a few minutes late.
Lee Daniels.
Present.
Representative Bliss. Representative Coulter.
Present.
Representative Davis.
Here.
Representative Hansen. Representative Hemmingson-Yeager.
Here.
Representative Hicks.
Here.
Representative Hudson.
Present.
Representative Katiza-Watoon.
Present.
Representative Lee.
Present.
Representative Nelson.
Present.
Representative Perez-Vega. Representative Zalesnikar.
Present.
Quorum's present.
Okay, excellent. And we have minutes before us from our February 16th meeting. May I have a motion to approve those?
So moved.
Representative Hudson moves approval of our minutes from February 16th. Any discussion, additions, corrections to those minutes? Hearing none, all in favor of approval of our February 16th minutes, please say aye.
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 Any opposed? Okay. Motion passes. Minutes are approved. So members, at our most recent meeting, actually the one whose minutes we just had approved, we received a presentation by DHS on the Minnesota Family Investment Program, Diversionary Work Program, and we're then hearing a series of bills that kind of relate to that topic as well. So on Thursday, we heard the presentation of House File 177 from Representative Hansen. And so we have three bills up today relating to that topic. As well. I did want to make sure members noticed we received some great follow-up information from Ms. Pinelli in House Research about that as well. So we will start off then with the bill from Chair Noor. Chair Noor, so glad to have you with us today. I'm going to ask Representative Katiza-Watoon if you would move to bring House File 466 before the committee.
Mr. Chair, I would move House File 466.
Thank you. Chair Noor, welcome to you, sir. You have a there's DE3 before us. Would you like to have that that moved as well, Chair Noor?
Good morning, Mr. Chair. Yes, I'd like to move the DE3, Mr. Chair.
Okay, great. And so, Representative Katiza-Watoon, if you'd be willing to move that as well.
Mr. Chair, I would move the DE3 amendment House File 466.
Thank you. Yeah, and so members, any discussion on that? I think this is the bill we're going to be hearing from the author. So no discussion to that. So all in favor of the motion to adopt the DE3 amendment to House File 466, please say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Okay. That motion passes, and the bill is in the form the author wishes. And so, Chair Noor, welcome to our committee. So glad to have you here, and please begin presentation of your bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. This is a great day when we talk about the bill that is before us. House File 466, as amended, Mr. Chair and members, does simple stuff that will make the work for the workers and the county and the recipient much easier for them to receive benefits. Mr. Chair, this bill repeals the Diversionary Work Program, or known as DWP. 20 years ago, when this program was created as a parallel program with the MFIP program, Minnesota Family Investment Program, this was created to be a stopgap process for only 4 months so that we can provide intensive employment program for the individual. Guess what? After 20 years, there's nothing that has changed, meaning that most of the individuals who go through the DWP program will end up in MFIP in one way or the other within 12 months. So what we essentially created, we created more burden, we created more work for the staff, we created a system that does not work for anyone other than just being there to create more confusion, create more errors, create more administrative burden. Mr. Chair and members, this is now an attempt to simplify. When an individual or participant walks through the door and apply for a program for cash assistance by creating one cash assistance program that is MFIP. Quite frankly, if you look at the results, for many who have looked through the data over the last few years, DWP has not yielded the results. It has created more stress, and we're trying to make sure that we can repeal a program that is not essentially needed at this point. I was working for the county when this program was initiated, and quite frankly, many people were confused. The complexity in the programs that we're talking about, from MFIP to DWP to SNAP program to healthcare, makes it really complex and also creates the churning of the people who are off the program because we are not helping those who needed the help. Mr. Chen, members, this bill also removes some of the other barriers. For example, we are removing the hardship that is created by sanctions. Let me give an example. If an individual is to receive a hardship extension, MFIP is for 60-month time limit. But what we essentially created is if you are in sanction in the last month of your 68th month in MFIP program, essentially you are completely disqualified from the program, unless you do have a good cause, that you should not be in a sanction. Members, if there's a hardship, whether it's a mental illness, whether it's a barrier to get employment, whether you've got someone who's sick at home, this does not help. Likewise, we have also reduced the time frame an individual can receive benefits when it comes to the hardship extension, when we essentially created a barrier in saying that if you have not been in sanction in the last 10 months within the 12 months, we're increasing the complexity of the program and how it was designed to work. So this bill removes those complexities. Mr. Chair and members, I'm glad to inform you that we're also removing the retrospective budgeting. Essentially, what we do is we look at the income, which it's called the income month, and then we have the budget month, and then we have the benefit month. Essentially, we're looking 2 months of your income to determine the benefit you're going to be receiving next month. So this bill will move us into prospective budgeting, which requires us to anticipate the income of the individual looking forward. Guess what? When you come in and apply for MFIP, what we do is we use prospective budgeting for the first 2 months, and then we go back into retrospective budgeting. It doesn't make any sense. And we are one of the only states that uses retrospective budgeting. So this bill today is essentially removing that burden and creating a fair system whereby we're using anticipated income for that individual so that we can have a continuous program for those individuals who are receiving the benefits. Likewise, in this bill, Mr. Chair and members, I'm excited to inform you that we are also creating a six-month reporting process, meaning that instead of doing a monthly reporting, we're going to be asking individuals to report every 6 months because we know changes happen. We know things will change. But when we put that button, I'm showing you this is when you walk in. This is a booklet that individuals receive just to apply for the program. None of us are going to go through this when you're in crisis. It's really difficult because we're making it harder for everybody, including the workers. When I worked at the county, I used to have more than 300 cases to process. Can you imagine 300 cases that everyone has to receive a household report form on a monthly basis? They have to inform me how much income they're getting, if there's any kind of change that has happened in the last 30 days. That creates a burden not only for the family, but also for the workers because you have to process each and every case. Guess what? If you didn't process that case by the 16th of the month, the family will get a letter telling them that they will receive a stop of benefits. And most of the time, we have to go back and reinstate a case within 30 days to continue the benefits. We essentially created another hardship in that process. Today is a good day when we're creating a program that is more functional, more simplified, and also aligned with the other programs such as SNAP in terms of reporting and also healthcare to make sure that we've got a streamlined process so we can serve the participants in the program. It's a big bill, but with good ideas to move us forward. Mr. Chair, I have good testifiers with me who will help us go through the process.
Thank you so much, Chair Noor. And before we do that, I just want to ask House Research to confirm. I believe that everything in this bill is in the governor's budget, but perhaps that, no, a portion. And Nellie, if you wouldn't mind just clarifying for us which portion of this is in the governor's budget, you know.
Mr. Chair, members, my understanding is the two pieces that are part of the governor's budget is the six-month reporting and the prospective budgeting.
Okay. Thank you so much, Ms. Benelli. And then as I turn to testifiers, we're pretty tight on time, so I think you've all been told to limit your remarks to 2 minutes, and I'll be pretty strict about that. Ms. Webster, we'll start with you. Please identify yourself and proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, members. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I use she, her pronouns, and I've worked with the Minnesota Family Investment Program for about 16 years. I want to thank Chair Noor for bringing this bill, for this good day, and really for the wealth of expertise in MFIP that he brings to this legislation and the conversation. So when I talk about MFIP, I remind people of two things. One, everyone accessing MFIP has children. At its core, this is a children's anti-poverty program. We like to talk a lot about the adults in this program, but really this program is about kids. And to that point, in your packet, I believe the Children's Defense Fund provided profiles for every district in terms of who is accessing, the children that are accessing MFIP in your districts. The second thing that maybe doesn't need to be stated today is that MFIP is one of the most arcane and complicated programs run by the state of Minnesota. Some of that complexity comes from federal laws and regs, but much of that unneeded complexity comes from decades of really well-intentioned state decision-making. Some states have a few pages of statutes. Minnesota has hundreds and hundreds of pages of statute in this program. And so when you want to make a little simplification, as you see in this amendment, it can lead to 49 pages. So it is a complex program. And to the bill, this is really, it's a really first important step in simplification. I sometimes talk about MFIP as a tangled ball of yarn, and we ask counties and parents to untangle this ball of yarn and knit something beautiful at the same time, and that's really difficult. So I really appreciate every effort to simplify where we can. Chair Noor already talked about the simplifications in this bill. I really see them in three buckets: the budgeting and reporting buckets, the DWP bucket, which I think the counties will talk about later, and then the sanctions and financial penalties bucket. That last bucket is the way that we sanction families right now. We have one of the steepest penalty schemes in the country. Some families face a $300 penalty when they make a mistake in the program. So this also addresses that. Yeah, with that, we have other testifiers, and I will wrap up. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you so much, Ms. Westrum. Thanks for all of your work, and I suspect we may need you to answer questions, so please stick around. Yeah, Commissioner Lundy, come on up, and after you will be Alana Gravitz. But please, Commissioner, as you get settled in, once you do, please identify yourself and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, Chair and committee members. Thank you for having me today. My name is Jeff Lundy, representing District 1 at Hennepin County Board of Commissioners. Hennepin County is grateful to Representative Noor for carrying House File 466 to simplify income reporting requirements for families on MFIP, allowing county staff to more efficiently serve our residents while reducing administrative burden. Changing the income verification from monthly to every 6 months will allow families to focus on finding new work, finishing school, and completing a training program, knowing that they have the support they need. This change will also benefit counties by reducing the amount of staff time required to process monthly reports. This bill will also allow Hennepin County to better serve families in need of cash assistance by serving all families through MFIP rather than DWP. DWP was originally created to divert families away from MFIP, but data has shown that the program does not work. Less than 10% of Hennepin County families successfully complete DWP, and the vast majority move on to MFIP. MFIP provides the same benefits and support as DWP, so having two programs that share the same goal as stabilizing families yet are administered differently requires separate applications and additional staff time to work with families, an example of unnecessary government bureaucracy and complexity. This bill is a common sense approach to supporting working families while also simplifying the administrative burden for both families and county staff. But simply, time is money, and the more time that we spend on processing stuff takes away from the time that we can spend on helping people move out of crisis and instability. So with that, I'd like to thank you for your time today and your attention. Thanks.
Commissioner, thanks for your work and your public service, and glad to have you here. We've got Alana Gravitz up next, and then it'll be Tina Rucci after that. And so as you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Chair Pinto and members of the committee, my name is Alana Gravitz, and I'm a manager in Hennepin County Economic Supports. Together with a colleague from Beltrami County, I co-chaired the MAXA work group on the diversionary work program. I'm glad to be here in support of this bill today and to speak specifically to the DWP portion. When families apply for cash assistance, counties are required to determine their eligibility for either MFIP or DWP based on specific rules, such as if the family has been on cash assistance in the past 12 months. The eligibility criteria for the two programs is the same, and the majority of people who are assigned to DWP do end up using MFIP as well. So this bill eliminates complexity and creates one comprehensive program that works for all residents by having all families start with MFIP. DWP is a four-month program. This is not enough time for most families to stabilize, which is why the vast majority end up using at least a few months of MFIP. Let's think for a minute about the realities of a program that expects families with very low income to stabilize in just 4 months. As you well know, a large portion of Minnesota is a child care desert. 4 months is not enough time to find child care. A large portion of Minnesota does not have reliable mass transit, leaving many residents without enough time to secure transportation. If a family only needed 4 months of cash assistance, that's fine, but most need a little more. So why would we put a barrier in front of them and have them go through the whole application and interview process all over again? The application and interview process is also time intensive for counties, so this system of repeated application is draining resources without adding value for the public. Our policy goal is for families to become self-sufficient, not to provide an unrealistic timeline and create rework for them and for the county staff who serve them. Serving all families through MFIP leverages all the supports that MFIP has to offer while providing families the time they need to increase their economic stability. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Thanks for your work. Thanks for being here. Tina Rucci, you're up next, and then Megan Jacket will be up after that. So yeah, please identify yourself once you settle in and proceed.
Good morning, Mr. Chair and committee members. I'm Tina Rucci, Advocacy Manager at Greater Twin Cities United Way. It's a pleasure to be here today and testify in support of House File 466. At Greater Twin Cities United Way, our mission is to unite changemakers, advocate for social good, and develop solutions to address the challenges no one can solve alone. Last year, we touched over 500,000 lives across the 9-county metro area and funded over 100 service organizations and coalitions that do amazing work every day to support our communities. Organizations like St. Paul Promise Neighborhood, one of our highly valued nonprofit partners who will be testifying after me. Together, we are working to advance pathways toward economic independence for working families from low-wealth households. Addressing the benefits cliff was elevated as a top priority by our nonprofit partners, who see it as a primary barrier to increasing family income and achieving financial stability. The benefits cliff occurs when a public benefit program quickly tapers off or phases out completely, resulting from a small increase in earnings. This small gain in income, coupled with a sudden loss of benefits, ultimately causes families to backslide financially. With the current demand for workers, it is important to support pathways toward better jobs, better wages, and increased hours, rather than penalizing people for taking advantage of employment advancement opportunities. Short-term public benefits like MFIP can help families get back on their feet to pay for housing, food, childcare after a temporary job loss or crisis. House File 466 will help stabilize benefits, allowing workers to pursue the education, training, and career support needed to expand their capacity for higher wage employment. It would eliminate unnecessary administrative burdens that cause barriers to families, and it would align reporting requirements with the federal SNAP program for strong quality control measures. Small changes to MFIP budgeting periods will reduce barriers and encourage a thriving workforce, a thriving economy, and most importantly, thriving families. Thank you, Representative Knorr, for your support on this issue, and to the committee members for your time today.
Thank you so much, Ms. Rucci, and come on up, Megan Jacket. I should note, as a constituent of mine, so I'm especially glad to have her here. And once you get settled in, please identify yourself and proceed.
Okay. Chair Pinto and members of the committee, my name is Megan Jacket, and I work at the St. Paul Promise Neighborhood. For over 10 years, SPPN has worked to promote racial and economic justice so every child in St. Paul can live a great life, pursue the career of their choice, and build wealth for their family. Today, I am testifying in support of House File 466 by sharing a story from one of our families in the neighborhood. This parent recently participated in our six-month People's Fellowship to learn financial literacy and chart a path to building wealth and assets for the future. This parent plans to attend Normandale Community College, pursue a degree in business administration, receive her realtor's license, and ultimately start her own business. She currently works at Amazon, but has recently had to cut back her hours to have time to move her education and career plans into action, all while still caring for her three-year-old son. She's turned to MFIT for support, hoping the program will help her fill in the gaps to make ends meet as she works to build a better future for her family. Yet, her income and MFIT benefit have fluctuated through this life transition. The turmoil of being unable to predict her monthly income has been stressful and honestly quite disincentivizing. She is working to become more financially independent, yet feels penalized for doing so given the repercussions under the current system. Her story is one of many we hear from families working towards building a brighter future. Please consider House File 466 a strong foundation for families to climb higher. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Ms. Jacket. Thanks for all of your work. Are there any members of the public who wish to testify on the bill? And I should note the plan is to lay it over today for possible inclusion in a budget bill. Okay, so then seeing none, then we'll move on to member discussion questions. Members, Representative Lesnikar, we'll start with you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Representative Knorr. I just had a question. I understand this bill, and I just have questions surrounding the 24 operation settings, because there's many of them. And many workers are working in settings like that, like assisted livings and nursing homes. And so one of the things when I'm looking at this, I just have a question, and Chair Knorr, or Representative Knorr, you probably know the answer to this. But with MFIB, it's 60 months. Understand that. It's for the child care, and the worker is either looking for work or going to school, which makes great sense to me. I guess one of the questions I'm wondering is it says in here on one of the pages that it talks about employers verifying employment, you know, like reasons that delays have happened for counties because the employer didn't verify employment, you know, and I can understand that too. With the employer verification, beyond that first step of I'm an employer, you're an employer, this person works for me, and that you submit the paperwork. What systems are in place to let the county agency know what the payroll's been or the call-ins, call-outs? We call them call-ins, call-outs, and 24-hour break. It doesn't matter if it's for PTO or it could be FML, it could be anything, but to allow the county to know what the person is on for payroll. Is there a system? Can you explain to me the system we have that tracks that?
Chair Knorr.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, Representative Lesnikar. For anyone who's receiving MFIP, they're required to produce their pay stub, the copy of their pay stub, so that the worker can actually process that. So that's why I said we have to look back retrospectively on that income. There isn't any system at this point that can actually track every employer so that the system can update that information. But likewise, I think we do have periodic systems that are created for when employers report to DEED, that information is shared, so that information is also passed to the worker so they can see if there's any discrepancy in place. Likewise, I think I do have another bill that will also simplify using the work number in order to verify employment information for those who are participating through that process.
Thank you, Representative Knorr. And I would support that. I think a number makes more sense, like we do medical record numbers and we do tracking, you know, numbers to know so that we can help a person. Because one of the concerns I've had, and I've shared it at other committees, is that as we increase benefits, regardless of what system it is, and we have to fill shifts, this for the group of workers that are on MFIB, they are not picking up shifts. So if they only can work two shifts a pay period or a week, that's two shifts. And so as we've increased the wages, we are capped at an amount of money. And so, you know, I totally support, you know, the program. I want to make sure we have a pathway to full independence for a person to reach their highest potential as fast as possible. And with the number of nursing homes and assisted livings and that have shifts open, I mean, we have so much employment opportunity for people, for pathways to, for teaching and nursing, and the list goes on and on. I want to make sure people aren't penalized, that we have an opportunity for them to meaningfully save some money and then get a pathway back to full independence, because I don't want them to be penalized where that's not going to happen, because we're going to have facilities close, because many of the workers are on MTIP.
Could I ask you to if you can focus on getting to a question or
is that part being addressed as far as the number of shifts an employee can actually work to be eligible as we've increased raises?
Chair Noor, or thank you, Representative Zelizer. Chair Noor.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I think the 6 months reporting will simplify the process, so there's no burden to the workers, so they can focus on their employment. The intent of MFIP is for self-sufficiency. Mm-hmm. And we understand that many individuals just use a couple of months within 12 months. So this is a great initiative to make sure that there's no burden on the worker, and also there's no burden on the families, so that they can focus mm-hmm. on the employment and become more self-sufficient.
Representative Lozicar, final question?
No, thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, up next.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Chair Noor, for bringing this bill forward. We've talked a lot about how do we help our workforce right now, and this is one of the ways. The folks that are providing these services at the counties have so much on their plate with so much extra paperwork, and so I can just hear all my friends so excited about six-month renewals right now, and so I just wanted to express my gratitude for that and for really thinking about the changes we need to make holistically, that it isn't just one solution, that all of us are bringing forward bills that are going to make such a huge impact for kids and families. So thank you, Chair Noor.
Representative Hicks, you're up next.
Thank you, Chair. So I will be really brief. Thank you, Chair Noor, for bringing this. I do want to just say, I hear all the time that these benefits punish people for picking up shifts and they punish people for working, and it's simply not true. They showed us the chart that shows the difference. What is true, however, is that workers don't understand how their benefits interact with work. Bridge to Benefits is a wonderful program that many of our workers work through with folks to help them understand, but it is complicated. We have sat in this room and listened to all of those presentations, and you all heard how complicated it is. And so it's not that we punish people for working. These programs actually don't. You can continue to earn your NFIP up to a much higher amount than the cash benefit you're getting. You can keep your child care assistance up to a much higher amount. But what is missing is folks understanding how work and benefits work together to bridge to self-sufficiency. And I think if our workers aren't processing 300 renewals every month and instead are processing six-month renewals, they might have more time to do some of that counseling to help people understand. And if anybody ever wants to sit down, it's been a long time since I did that math on a whiteboard, but I think I could probably still do it in a pinch. And I'm happy to show people how to do it. But we have to educate folks about the bridge to benefits and how we work towards self-sufficiency so that they are empowered to make those decisions.
Thank you. Thank you, Representative Hicks. Representative Hudson. Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just a quick question. Can you give me a thumbnail sketch of how the prospective budgeting works? Like, what does that look like? Obviously, looking back, you're going to be looking at payroll. You're going to be looking at pay stubs. Is it just a guess of what's going to happen in the future? Is there any checking to see if the prospective budget was accurate after the fact?
Chair Noor or testifier.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'd like to ask my colleague to actually walk us through the prospective budgeting.
Thank you. Yeah, Ms. Webster, please.
Mr. Chair, I can walk through it clumsily, but I think it'd be better if the department walked through it.
Okay, if we have somebody else who can give a more precise answer or less clumsy answer in response to Representative Hudson's question.
Representative Hudson has.
That'd be most helpful. Yeah, and once you settle into your chair, you can identify yourself, please, and then proceed with your testimony.
Sure. Ryan Johnson, Minnesota Department of Human Services, Representative Pinto, and Representative. Prospective budgeting looks at income over the last 30 days and then any anticipated income over the budget period. So in this case, the budget period would be over the six-month period.
Representative Hudson. And maybe stay here, Mr. Johnson, because Representative Hudson may have a follow-up question.
I think that gives me the thumbnail sketch. You are looking at something and projecting forward.
Okay. And it sounds like, in a way, it is a slightly retrospective because it's past 30 days, but then it's seeing what changes may be coming. Okay, good. Yeah, thanks. And no other follow-up, Representative Hudson? No, okay. Representative Lesnikar, looks like you maybe had another item. Yeah, Representative Lesnikar.
No, I appreciate the information today because to Representative Hicks, it may be that there's a gap of understanding. I don't know where it comes from. I only raise my questions, you know, because I've had many workers say, especially through COVID, we want to work more shifts, but their perspective was they're losing everything. So I don't know where that's coming from. I'm all for eliminating some red tape to allow the county to be more efficient. I think the more efficient we are is going to help everybody be able to have a pathway back to independence and understand it. So thank you for your efforts to do that.
Sounds like maybe a rich conversation outside of committee about some of those topics. Thank you, Mr. Johnson. And so going to Lee Daniels, as usual, for comment or question. Lee Daniels.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Well, my colleagues, again, have made some really good points. We kind of support the idea. Personally, I'm just not sure how this is going to incentivize people to be self-sufficient. I know there's guardrails and there's problems with, like Representative Zilliskar said, on how many hours they can work. And it's a long program. It's I believe it was 60 months total. So I've been working for a long time on welfare reform, and I think I've got an idea that might help smoothen all this out and get people working faster with a scalable payment plan for your insurance and such, and daycare if needed. But I do support the premise, and I think we had a pretty good discussion today, and I look forward to further conversations on this idea.
Thank you, Lee Daniels. And I should note for members, you'll note there's not a fiscal note at this time. That's going to be coming after the budget forecast. And then the bill is being laid over. And so by the time we're making our budgetary decisions, we'll have a sense of that. Mr. Berg, is there anything that I'm missing in what I just said? No. Good. Mr. Berg is endorsing that. And so we'll go to the bill's author. And I should note how lucky we are to have the expertise of Chair Knorr here. And perhaps, Chair Knorr, if you're willing, you could also comment a little bit on Lee Daniels' point about saying, not sure how this does get to self-sufficiency. But Chair Knorr, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members, for the conversation. This bill actually essentially creates simplification, and it also removes the burden, including the 6 months reporting, whereby it serves the purpose of making sure that the individual who is seeking help, this is particularly families with children. Majority of the participants in the program are young children, so this is supporting families so that we can end that deep poverty. When we create this burden for the workers, when we create this balance for the individuals who are in crisis, we are not serving the purpose of the cash assistance program or any program that we administer. Mr. Chair and members, I think this is a great bill that is going to solve a lot of problems, not only for the counties but for the state, and also reduces the burden in how we administer those programs. I'll ask for your support. And then, thank you so much, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Chair Knorr. Thanks for bringing it to us. And with that, the chair lays over House File 466 for possible inclusion in a budget bill. And again, grateful to have you here, Chair Knorr. And thanks to the testifiers, both for your testimony today, and to each of you for your work on behalf of the community. So, calling up Representative Hansen then for House File 1478. And Representative Hansen moves House File 1478 to bring that before the committee. And again, members, a similar situation that there's a fiscal note on this bill is going to come a little bit later, but this is being laid over for possible inclusion. And so we'll get a chance to address that. And Representative Hansen, you do have an author's amendment, the A1. Do you want to move that at this time?
Yes, please, Chair. I would like to move that amendment. It just gets my bill into the form that I would like and makes sure that this bill aligns with the governor's budget.
Ah, excellent. Good. And so discussion to the A1. So the motion is to approve the A1 author's amendment. Discussion of that. Hearing none. All in favor of approval of the A1 amendment, please say aye. 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 Any opposed? Okay, so House File 1478 is amended with the A1 then. That motion passes. And Representative Hansen, please present your bill.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, committee members. The bill before you today is House File 1478, and it is to modify the Family Assets for Independence in Minnesota program, also known as FAME. It will increase the match savings amounts, allow tribal nations to administer the program, expands access to financial counseling. Nationwide, nearly 90 million people live at or below 200% of the federal poverty level. In 2021, nearly 22% of Minnesotans lived on this income. That means that about 1.3 million people in our state make less than $60,000 a year for a family of four, or less than $29,000 a year for a single person. To make that a little bit more relatable math, that's nearly the entire population of our top 10 largest cities and suburbs in Minnesota. Additionally, 3 out of 4 people making less than 50 grand a year live paycheck to paycheck, and that rate of poverty worsens in communities of color due to generations of oppression, discrimination, and vitriolic political rhetoric around the race class experiences in our state. And let us not forget who's most directly impacted by poverty: children. It impacts brain structure by altering the white to gray matter ratios, and access to financial stability is a key social determinant of lifelong health outcomes. FAME is a state-funded matched savings program that currently helps Minnesotans with low income save towards buying a home, purchasing a car, starting or expanding a small business, or pursuing post-secondary education. This program couples savings with 12 hours of financial coaching and at least 10 additional hours of coaching as needed, ensuring that our participants have the support and information needed to reach their goals. Asset building is a proven way to stop intergenerational cycles of poverty, and FAME has been shown time and time again to be a successful model of asset building. FAME has the opportunity to help even more Minnesotans move out of poverty, but we can only reach all eligible households if we greatly expand this program. So clearly, there's a need here. I've shared with many of you that I grew up in poverty, and I'm raising 2 kids by myself right now. Stretching money, balancing small budgets, and triaging financial crises as they arise sucks. I can tell you firsthand from my personal experience and from the research that I've done in my time in academia around the cures for poverty, the absolute best and most effective thing we as a state can do for poor folks is invest in them, to reach out a hand to help someone up from a tough spot. I'm the product of a society that offered me a hand when I was just a teen mom in need of health care, housing, and food support. So I know the value that this moral position has in people's lives. This bill is an investment in Minnesotans who have long been underestimated, oppressed, or unseen. We have the opportunity to reduce childhood and family poverty this session and give every kid a great start in Minnesota. And this bill is one of the many critical ways that we can meet that goal. And with that, I would ask for your support, and I'll turn it over to my testifiers.
Thank you so much, and so glad to have this bill in front of us. Before we do move to testifiers, I'm going to do the same thing as in the prior bill and just ask Ms. Pinelli to confirm the extent to which this is in the governor's budget, if you happen to know that. I believe it is with the amendment, but do you know, Ms. Pinelli?
Mr. Chair and members, I haven't seen the language from the governor's budget, so I don't know if it's exactly the same, but just from reading the budget change pages, it sounds like it is.
Okay, and perhaps, Representative Hansen, it's your understanding that it is the same with the amendment, correct?
Correct, Chair. I made sure that we amended this to align with the dollar amounts. There is a slight difference in the emergency savings piece, which I'll let my testifier speak to a moment, but money-wise, yes, it aligns with the governor's budget.
Good, thanks so much. We can get to that, too, in questions, I know. So, Annie Shapiro, we'll start with you. Please identify yourself, and please proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. I'm Annie Shapiro. I'm the Advocacy Director at the Minnesota Community Action Partnership, which is the state association of all 24 community action agencies. Community Action serves low-income Minnesotans in all 87 counties with programs and services like energy assistance, housing, transportation, weatherization, Head Start, and FAME. A cornerstone value of Community Action is helping people move out of poverty. And we know that asset-building programs like FAME are one of the most successful ways to help people move out of poverty in the long term and to break intergenerational poverty. The testifiers who are coming later will talk about the impact that FAME has on the program participants, but I want to talk a little bit more about the program. As Representative Hansen said, FAME is a 3-to-1 match savings program that braids financial coaching with asset building. Currently, people can save towards purchasing their first home, buying a car, starting or expanding a small business, or pursuing higher education. And FAME has been around since 1999, and we know it's successful. People around the state have used it, and we've seen the success in studies. 94% of the people who choose to save towards homeownership have increased economic well-being after 4 years, either due to the retained home value or due to selling their home for a net gain. And there's studies like that for all of the eligible usage. But I think maybe even more importantly is that FAME participants report significantly higher understanding of financial management and budgeting, and significantly decreased utilization of public assistance programs after using the program as compared to before. We know FAME works, but currently the program only reaches about 40 people across the state per year at its current funding level. HF 1478 would greatly expand the program, allowing us to reach the hundreds of Minnesotans who could use the program across the state each year. I urge you to support this bill because we know FAME works, and it can and should be a tool that we can use to reduce poverty, but it can only be that tool if we actually expand it to meet the needs across the state. Thank you for your time, and I'm happy to answer questions about the emergency savings piece after.
Oh, that'd be great. Thank you. And actually, before we move on, I just want to confirm you said the program currently serves 40 Minnesotans per year?
Yes, Mr. Chair.
Okay. I mean, we'll want to explore that, I think, a little more. I will want to when we get to the discussion portion. But thank you so much. Roxanne Amendariz, I'm not sure if I'm saying your last name correctly, probably not, but you can come on down and settle into the chair, and then once you do, you can identify yourself, please, and begin your testimony. Hi.
I'm so nervous.
Oh no, you're all good. No problem. Yeah. So just if you can identify yourself, say your name, and to proceed with your testimony. No problem.
Right. Well, thank you, Mr. Chair. Hi. Thank you, Mr. Chair, for having me. My name is Roxanne Armendariz, and I work for Neighborhood Development Alliance, a nonprofit best known as NIDA. I have been working there for 20 years, and as a nonprofit, we wear many hats, and being a FAME coach is one of those hats that I enjoy the most because that's where I get to have the most fun at my job. And it's because the things that Annie mentioned and you mentioned, we get to work with families and engage them in saving, and then we get to work with them in teaching financial literacy, which is a great workshop where I get to have fun and engage people into saving and investing, and then we get to do one-on-one coaching, and that changes the mentality of our participant, that they can save, that they can invest, that they can open an investment account. And it just makes me happy. And, you know, and they're explaining, you know, that they can purchase a house or they can purchase a car, but it's a little bit more of that. I recently had a mom that was taking the bus to go to work back and forth. It takes her so long to take the bus and commute. And by purchasing a car, she was able to reduce the time and spend more time with her kids. I had a mom that came from an emergency shelter to live in, learning how to be on her own. And we started working with her in 2018. And in February 10th, she was finally able to purchase a home by just doing the coaching. She went through the financial literacy workshop twice. And it's just not just when we finish with the workshop and they reach their goal, that's great. But it's just they come back because they want to keep on working on their finances. And they bring their kids, you know, they bring their kids to our classes and they like teach them, talk to them. And so that's why I love FAME. And to the fact that Minnesota has such a great program and we tell our residents that as a state we care about building wealth, I love him, and this is why when they asked me, can you come and testify, I was like, heck yeah, I will be here, and I will tell you guys that I love him, and you guys should love this FAME program too. Thank you.
Thank you so much. Yeah. Thank you. Thanks for your the jolt of positive energy and for all the work that you do. Thanks so much. So then, Rhonda Addison, come on up. So glad to have you, and you can identify yourself once you get settled in and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Rhonda Addison, and I am a FAME participant from Willmar, and I'm here to tell you a little bit more about my FAME journey here today and how it impacted my life. When I began FAME in 2004, I was living paycheck to paycheck as a single parent of two young daughters. Overall, my greatest goal was to provide housing stability to my children, something that I didn't have growing up. An acquaintance shared the information about the FAME program, and upon hearing that I could save $40 and get a $160 match, that just seemed like a really great deal. I was in. I determined that my goals would be to finish my bachelor's degree and to purchase my first home. As I began to work towards those goals, I worked with my FAME coach to set actionable goals, keeping me accountable to the things that I needed to do to pay off debt. I began to save. I completed the financial literacy class and completed a cost-benefit analysis of completing my degree. I completed my final class to earn my bachelor's degree and began searching for a home. That was a really exciting process. It's also a very complicated process, and having somebody there to help you guide is really important. I purchased my first home on August 25th of 2006, and I've lived there ever since. Because of the FAME program, I have a safe, decent, affordable place to call home, and it's made it possible to provide stability and a foundation for my family. Finishing my bachelor's degree was a stepping stone as I worked toward my career goals and to make a difference in my community. I'm also part of a first generation in my family to obtain higher education. Since completing the FAME program back in 2006, I've completed a master's degree and am a proud parent of two daughters, and one in college that will be graduating in May, and the other graduated a few years ago. And I'm now the executive director of the Minnesota Coalition for the Homeless, where I advocate to ensure that all people have a home. FAME is an outstanding program that increases wealth through home ownership and is a really important tool to break cycles of poverty. By increasing the state match savings, more families like mine can benefit from the FAME program, and Minnesota can work to create more opportunities for communities of color to access home ownership. FAME helps people build a solid foundation, and I urge you to support this bill and increase funding for the FAME program so more people like me can benefit from it.
Ms. Addison, thank you for sharing your powerful story and your journey. That's really just incredible. And congratulations, and then you've now dedicated your work to helping other people experiencing homelessness. So thank you so much. Are there any anybody from the public who wishes to testify on the bill? So seeing none, we will move to member questions and discussion. Anybody, Representative Hicks, we'll call on you first.
Thank you, Chair, and I'll be really brief.
No problem.
But we have a great personal experience with FAME. Our PCA, who actually ended up being our babysitter, who is a person with autism, used the FAME program to purchase her first home. And now she works in an early childhood special education classroom as one of our paraprofessionals and also PCAs for some of our most complex community members in Rochester. And she's able to keep that home. And as rent prices have, you know, risen, she said to me just the other day when I was checking in with her that she's so grateful that she has her little two-bedroom home because she wouldn't be able to afford rent with the cost of rent in our community now. She can afford her little two-bedroom home. And so this program was so helpful for her. And when we talk about the importance of giving people the confidence to be independent, right, this is one of the ways that we can do that. So I'm so grateful for you for bringing this and giving it these much-needed updates. Thank you, Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. I'll maybe ask my following up. Well, we'll go to Representative Nelson, and I'll ask my question. Representative Nelson, go to you.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, Representative Hansen, for bringing this. I'm just kind of wondering, do we have an idea how many Minnesotans access this program, maybe on an annual basis, or how widely used is this?
That kind of connects to my questions, Representative Nelson. So, yeah, Representative Hansen, or if you want to call on somebody to answer that a little more.
Chair Pinto, yeah. I will fill the time while my testifier walks to the table here, of course, because I'm always good at doing that. But I do have a handout that I'd be happy to send around. I don't think it made it into the committee documents, but I can hand that out, that it gives some more information about the purpose, the description, eligibility, delivery. This helped me learn a lot about the program. And when I was reading this, I was like, man, this would have been really helpful when I had a baby at, you know, 17 years old. So, but I'll hand it over to my testifier to give you the actual specifics.
And please do make sure to send that around to us. Yeah, but Ms. Shapiro, if you could answer Representative Nelson's question.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair and Representative Nelson. So FAME used to be funded both by the state and by the federal IDA program, but the federal IDA program was discontinued about 5 years ago. So now it's currently only funded by the state. And so because it's funded at $325,000 annually by the state, that's why it can only serve about 40 and some change people each year, because the state match savings is currently set at 6,000. So 6,000 times 40 is 240,000, and then, you know, a few others plus some funding for financial coaching. So it used to be a lot more, and that's why we want to expand it, because once the federal funds went away, now it's only state funds, and they're fairly minimal.
And IDA stands for Individual Development Account. Is that right?
Okay. Yes, Mr. Chair.
Representative Nelson, follow up, please.
Okay, yeah, and I, you know, thank you for that clarification on the answer, because I think it's, you know, encouraging savings, and, you know, I think especially the coaching and the building the plan is so, that, I mean, that may be, you know, that may be some of the biggest parts of it, is helping build the plan of how do you save and having a plan and a goal and where you want to head to. Because if we, like the old saying is, if you fail to plan, or got to get it right before I say it here.
And
but if you
fail to plan, you plan to fail?
Yes, there you go.
Yeah.
You know, fail to plan, you plan to fail. And, you know, and I think, you know, having plans is so crucial. And, you know, an understanding, you know, we talked a bit in committee last week of, you know, having goals and financial literacy, and I mean, this is, I think, part of it, and understanding how it works. And I think it's when you have a little bit of a nest egg, it can be so much more encouraging to continue to build on that and to see that go. So thank you for working on this, and even if it's only the coaching for maybe we can expand that into, you know, further areas as well, you know, even if that's all we can do. So, thank you.
Thank you, Representative Nelson. Representative Hansen, you had something you want to say in response to that?
Thank you, Chair, and thank you, Representative Nelson. There's a bill to make sure that we have financial literacy taught in high school as well. So I agree with you. As somebody who grew up in poverty, my family did not teach me how to be stable. They taught me how to be poor. And trying to break those cycles was really, really difficult with two young kids, trying to be a first-generation college graduate, buy a house before I was 30. You know, trying to do all those things was really, really challenging. And so I agree with you that the financial literacy piece of this is most important. When we were talking about this bill originally, I was like, I will only support this if we make sure there's financial literacy coaching in here. And that's when I was told, good news, there's a lot. And this is actually one of the most effective ways to make sure. As you've heard from our testifiers, they come back a couple of times to even take that class, because after generations of being taught how to evade bill collectors and just push those utility bills out and everything, it takes a long time to learn new patterns of behavior. And so I think that support around you is just really helpful. And I would refer to it as financial counseling, because it is a process for people so often. So thank you.
Thank you. Representative Lee, you're up next.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to thank Rep. Hansen for bringing this bill forward. It's so, so important. And I know we've talked a lot about financial literacy, so I want to just highlight the improvements to the program that this bill brings about. The 529 savings plans are super, super important. I mean, you know, we can talk about financial literacy, but this is actually like a really concrete next steps for parents to set their kids on a path that's really helpful, right? And as a member of the tax committee, you know, we always talk about making sure that our tax code works for everyone, especially our working families. And so really excited that we can make this tool available to the people who arguably need it the most.
Thank you, Representative Lee. Representative Zalesnikar, you're up.
Thank you very much, Representative Hansen. I couldn't agree more with the
concept of financial literacy being taught to kids, all kids, because I think it's something we all benefit from, just learning how to be, how to do that at all stages of life. I was just looking at the numbers, and I think, and I'm a big fan of this, I just wanted to make sure I understand. If 40 people, we served, I think, 40, if I understood it right, at $325,000. I don't know if that was for a one-year or two-year period. So that would be like $8,125 per slot. If I'm following the math right, we would want 3,000 slots. Somewhere that's in here that I've read, and at a $10 million investment, I think, is on this sheet, which would be about $3,333 for a set. So it looks like the amount per person would go down. I'm just wondering if I'm following the math right, because I'm a math person. So I just wanted to make sure I'm not misunderstanding something, because I think this program does some great things. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you. Representative Hansen, you can sort of clarify some of this, please.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. I'm really glad that there's broad support for this, so thank you for expressing that. Representative Zeleznikar, I appreciate that. I am not a math person either. I'm going to admit it. Doug Berg is the math guy here, but I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers. She can help break that down for you.
Yep, Ms. Shapiro.
Yeah, thank you, Representative Zeleznikar, and thank you, Chair Pinto. So the way that it works currently is it's $325,000 annually is the appropriation. It's 41 or two people statewide a year at $6,000 is the current maximum in statute. And then there's a little bit of money in there for some of the financial coaching pieces that are really critical that we've talked about. This bill would increase it to $5 million a year in 24 and 25. So that's, as you said, $10 million. And then the way that we're hoping to do it is to increase also the match savings as written in there to from $6,000 to $12,000, especially because of the increased cost for homeownership. And we've done some back of the napkin calculations, and that would, we think that we could reach around probably 400, 450 people with that amount due to annually due to the increased match savings, but also with some additional funding for financial coaching.
Oh, Representative Hansen looks like and then we'll go back to the bill's author. Yeah.
Thank you, Chair. And I wanted to ask if that was a good answer. If we had any more information, I want to take notes so that I can bring any information back if there's further questions, because I know we're short on time.
We'll let Zeleznikar see if she's got follow-up.
No, thank you for the information. Appreciate it.
Yeah. I should note for folks, and I'm going to confirm this with Mr. Berg, $5 million a year in 24 and 25 would mean that to be $5 million then in the base going forward for this program. Is that correct, Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair, that's correct. It does this. I'll note as well that the governor's initiative on this, while it does ramp up at a slightly different amount, it does not get to the $5 million until 2026, but it references an additional 500 families.
Okay, which is kind of the order of magnitude we talked about. Thank you, Mr. Berg. Yeah. And is there something you're going to add about that? No. I also, Mr. Berg, I'm just going to confirm this too. I think I may have misspoken earlier about the need for a fiscal note coming, because I think in the case of this bill, the amount is actually written right in the bill. Is that correct, Mr. Berg?
Mr. Chair, there actually is a fiscal note request on this because of the fact that it actually appropriates a different amount than the governor's budget. I suspect it will get to the same administrative costs that are in the governor's budget, just maybe on a slightly different time scale. But other than that, it's the administrative costs, which is adding a couple of staff and some.
Thank you, Mr. Berg. Good. And again, either way, going to be laid over. We're going to, did you have a quick follow-up, Representative Nelson? Because, yeah, otherwise, yeah.
Yeah, just a quick, thank you, Chair Pinto. Are there financial requirements is there eligibility requirements of how does an individual or family, eligible? Because, at a threshold of basically 40 people right now, that's fairly small a percentage of Minnesotans mm-hmm. that are eligible or the program is available for. So what is the eligibility?
Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Chair, and thank you for the question. I just emailed you the handout, Representative Nelson, so that should be in your inbox, and Coley has it as well, so hopefully that can get to the committee. So in that document, you'll see that eligibility is defined as household incomes must fall below 200% of the federal poverty level, and that's, you know, roughly $40,000 a year for a family of four, family of three, 60 for a family of four, or $29,000 for an individual is roughly 200% of the poverty level.
So a tiny percentage of the people who would be eligible could benefit from this or receive help right now.
Right, yeah. Right. Okay. And I'll just remind you, the committee chair, sorry to interrupt you, you know, that's the number of people living at that level in Minnesota. All of our largest cities, the top 10 largest cities in Minnesota, if we put everybody who's living under 200% of poverty, it would be take up a lot of our districts. And I think wrapping our minds around that is important, because living in poverty affects children so significantly. As as a kid who came up from poverty, I can tell you my life would have been a lot different had my family had the access to the resources that they needed.
Representative Perez Vega, please.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I just want to say thanks to Representative Hansen. This is a program that does work. Many of my constituents that I spoke with on my campaign trail are members of these programs, have had the opportunity. We come from the disparities of not growing up with generational wealth, and this creates an opportunity for families to teach their children while they're learning together how to grow together and how to build equity within their housing. It's just beautiful to see that. It's great to see folks from our community and the work that programs like organizations like NIDA does, because it works and they've been successful, and it's great, and I'm looking forward to supporting this. Thank you.
Thanks so much, Representative Perez Vega. Anything else from anybody? Not seeing any discussion, so we're going to go to the bill's author, Representative Hansen, to close us out.
Thank you, Chair Pinto, and thank you, members, for such a good discussion today. You know, there's a lot of conversations we have in our committees that can be hard to have, but I think investing in people, giving people a hand, that's a Minnesota value. We know that when people are struggling, that it's in our culture. It's in our values to reach back. And so I just want to thank you all for reaching back. We're all in very privileged positions to be here and make decisions on behalf of Minnesotans who really need us to be serious and think hard about this. So I appreciate the compassion.
Thank you, Representative Hansen. Mm-hmm. So with that, the chair lays over House File 1478, as amended. Thank you so much, and thanks to your testifiers for all of their work. I may have misspoken before. The House File 466 was laid over as amended, of course, as well. Representative Hansen, I'm actually going to call you up here, because the final bill on our agenda is mine. I ask Representative Hansen to chair. And then if I may, Madam Chair, I'm going to move House File 238 to bring it before the committee.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Next on the agenda is House File 238. Chair Pinto has moved that House File 238 be before the committee. Chair Pinto, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you so much, Madam Chair and members. So this is, I guess, our fourth bill in a row addressing the MFIT program. And what the bill does is that it modifies requirements for the program to allow certain individuals who are victims of crimes, in particular trafficking, have suffered a substantial physical or mental abuse, to be eligible to receive MFIP, even if they are themselves not citizens. I have worked I think folks are aware that I'm a prosecutor in my work outside the legislature, and I work specialize in the area of domestic violence and sexual exploitation and sex trafficking, and so I've worked with a number of individuals who've been the victims of crimes in these ways, and it does seem to me that these are folks who should be eligible to participate in the program, and I do have a couple testifiers who can talk a little more about that. I would love to have them up now. Thank you.
Our testifiers up first is Kathy Santa Maria Mendez. You want to make your way to the testifying table, and once you get settled, introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, and proceed with your testimony.
Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Kathy Santa Maria Mendez, and I'm currently a resident of Little Canada, and I grew up in St. Paul. I'm an immigrant from El Salvador, and I'm currently a third-year law student at Mitchell Hamlin. I'm here today because I'm a former client, and I'm also been an intern at the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota, also known as ILCM. ILCM is a statewide nonprofit that provides legal representation, advocacy, and education to low-income immigrants and refugees. ILCM is proud to serve communities throughout its offices in Moorhead, Austin, Worthington, and here in St. Paul. I'm here to support HF 238, which would expand the Minnesota Family Investment Program to include non-citizen parents with U visas and T visas. To qualify for a U visa or T visa, non-citizens must prove that they've been a victim of certain violent crimes, such as domestic violence, sexual assault, or trafficking. Additionally, they must prove that they suffered mental abuse or physical abuse and that they cooperated with local law enforcement in the prosecution of the criminal activity. In many instances, U visa and T visa holders are survivors of crimes perpetrated by trusted family members, friends, or their partners. By reporting the crimes, they make all of us safe, but in return, they may lose their housing, their cars, or their sole breadwinners, or what makes them economically stable. I'm well acquainted with these visas because I myself received a U visa and I've also represented families as a student attorney. Allowing U visa and T visa holders to access MFIP would have helped my family and would also be a game changer for many families across the state. It would provide them with the support these families need to overcome financial, physical, and emotional consequences that they suffered because of the crime and would also provide them with financial support they need to transition to safety and self-sufficiency. We urge the passage of HF 238 to allow U visa and T visa holders to be eligible for the Minnesota Family Investment Program to support them and their families to rebuild their family lives and to navigate the trauma and the consequences because of the crime that they faced. Thank you so much.
Thank you for your testimony, and thanks for being here to share about the need for this. Our next testifier is Jessica Webster, staff attorney with Legal Aid. Feel free to introduce yourself, share your pronouns if you'd like, and proceed with your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Jessica Webster. I'm a staff attorney with Legal Aid. I use she, her pronouns. I work with the Minnesota Family Investment Program, and I am in strong support of this bill. I want to thank Chair Pinto for bringing it. Legal Aid really sees this as more of a technical bill. It feels like, you know, if you look at actually the bill and Section 1, Subdivision 1, to be eligible for MFIP, We talk about who is eligible, and non-citizens legally residing in the United States are eligible for the Minnesota Family Investment Program. So the folks that we're talking about today, both parents and children with U visas and T visas, should be eligible for this program, and it feels like a technical oversight of sorts, and maybe we can stand for questions on that, but I just support the bill very strongly. Thank you for the opportunity to testify.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone here that would like to offer public testimony on the bill? We have one person making their way up. So once you get settled, please introduce yourself, share your name, your pronouns if you'd like, and proceed with your testimony.
My name is Dr. Bruce Corey. If you don't mind, Chair, and Chair, I just want to comment on the three bills that happened. I'm an economist. You might recognize me. I sent an email to all of you on the ethnic economy in each of your districts. What I hope that you can achieve this session is resolve the issue around the benefits cliff. And all these bills are addressing that because in a pathway to financial independence, it's so important that we take that out of the way so people can get good jobs. And that's all I have to say. I really appreciate that, and I appreciate your leadership.
Thank you for sharing that. That's really kind of you. And thanks for joining us today for all of our bills and providing all of us with that important information about our districts. Are there any others who would like to testify on this bill from the public? Seeing none, we'll turn it over to member questions. Representative Hudson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Since we have the time, I'll ask just kind of a nerdy question.
Please do.
So it looks like this just inserts a very tiny little bit of language into the eligibility requirements or the citizenship requirements. I'm curious because I'm looking at the U.S. code. Can you explain how this achieves what you're trying to do? Like, how does referencing these definitions actually accomplish the potential of the goal or the stated goal of the bill?
I'll let you do it, sure.
Madam Chair, Representative Hudson, thank you for the question. So I think you're referencing line 2.7 where we cite United States Code 1101. Is that correct? So as you'll see, that cites 1101 and it keeps intact A through S, 1101, A15, A through S, not T and U, and keeps V. And so, you know, one of the reasons that we're taking out, there's a few reasons to take out T and U visas. So we're talking about U visas, victims of crime, T visas, victims of trafficking. So these folks are residing legally and are actually, if they're later looking at a pathway to, or hopefully getting a pathway to citizenship in the United States, they're not penalized for accessing cash assistance. So that's why we're focused on those two groups for now. And doing it in this way was something that we received technical assistance from immigration experts at the department.
Any follow-up, Representative Hudson?
No, thank you. Just that correction made me realize that I was thinking in inverted terms about how this functions. So thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I actually was going to ask the same question to Ms. Jessica Weber to just explain why it's important to have this technical fix. But I don't know if she wanted to expound on that, because you do get penalized from using public funds when you want to be on that path towards citizenship.
Thank you. And Jessica?
Madam Chair and Representative, I think one of the things you're talking about is public charge. And so the United States government, when looking at, and I play an immigration lawyer on TV, we have experts here who can talk in much more depth about public charge. But essentially, the United States government does not want to see that folks can't support themselves or be self-sufficient. But there are a lot of ways that we look at those applications and look at how folk, you know, what the background is for folks. And we don't want to penalize people who are working with the United States, have been victims of crimes and are working with the government. And so that's one of the reasons that T&U visas are not considered part of a public charge in admissibility criteria.
Thank you for that. Do you have any follow-up, Representative Lee?
I just wanted to say, and that's a really good public safety thing, too, because we want people to feel safe and, you know, to collaborate with law enforcement when it's important, because, I mean, you know, we don't want traffickers, you know, continuing to operate the way they do. So thank you.
Thank you. And next up is Representative Hicks.
Thank you, Chair. This is probably I may have this question completely confused. Maybe it's already covered. Are children on SIJIS visas who are victims of abuse by their parents, are they eligible for MFIP now, and does this help them at all, or is that something we haven't addressed yet? I'll turn it over to Jessica.
Madam Chair, I'm quickly out of my depth on this.
Anybody who does know? If you do.
I know.
Okay, come on up.
Looks like we have somebody making their way to the table. Once you get settled, just feel free to introduce yourself, answer to the extent you can, and proceed.
Madam Chair, Representative Hicks, my name is Vina Iyer, and I'm the Executive Director of the Immigrant Law Center of Minnesota. And unfortunately, I'm playing an immigration lawyer on TV today, too, in the sense that I don't know the answer to that specific question. However, I am happy to get that answer for you, Representative, and then get the answer to both yourself and to Representative Pinto.
Thank you so much. I have big feelings about children who have been abused by their parents and removed by their parents and are now under SIJIS status, and I want to make sure we protect them in the same way that we protect children who've been trafficked.
Thank you, Representative Hicks. Any other questions from members? Seeing none, I'll turn it back over to you, Chair Pinto, for a closing statement.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And I do want to highlight what Representative Lee had to say about this being a public safety issue kind of at base. I've completed a number of U-Visa applications for folks who really their cooperation, participation in a trial of an abuser or a trafficker has been absolutely critical. There was a article in the Star Tribune this weekend, a column about a Ramsey County deputy who is Somali Minnesotan and was just talking about his experience joining law enforcement and the importance of building up connections between law enforcement community and saying that in his community of his birth, often people would not report crimes because of concerns about you know, being able to trust government, et cetera, and trust law enforcement. And it's just so critical that we have these visa programs. And once we do, we really want to make sure that, as Webster said, really that this is a technical fix to say if somebody is legally residing in the U.S., who would otherwise be able to access MFIP, that they'd be able to. And certainly somebody who's been abused and a victim of crime in this way, we want to make sure that they do. So I appreciate the conversation, and we'll look forward to having this included, I would certainly hope, in our budget bill later. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. And Chair Pinto moves that HF 238 be laid over for possible inclusion. And with that, it will be laid over for possible inclusion. And with no other agenda items,
I'll have if it's okay, Madam Chair. Yeah, just to wrap. Thank you so much. Just to wrap us up, everybody. I was just going to note how grateful I am to folks for keeping us on track. We had a couple prior hearings where we'd had to drop a couple of things. Now, of course, we're ending a little bit early. We have quite Ms. Colburn, our CA, and I have quite a list of bills that we're going to be trying to make our way through. So, really appreciate members keeping an eye on things and the clock. We are scheduled currently still to hear four child protection bills on Thursday. The plan is to lay them over as well. We're going to have to see how the snow cooperates with that. But I'll ask members of both sides of the aisle to just keep in touch both about that hearing and about any bills you have moving. And thank you for the conversation today. And thank you again, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Chair Pinto. Thank you, members. We are adjourned.